I'm going to give you a rundown of what it is that we're going to be listening to during the prepared portion this evening. First of all, we're going to touch ever so briefly on a story that was in the San Jose Mercury News today. It concerns Richard Nixon's trip to San Jose in 1970. There was a serious disturbance there. A bunch of anti-Vietnam War protesters were incensed by Nixon's presence and were quite disruptive. What is not carried in this particular account of this event, which is now coming back into public focus because of the recent revelations from former Nixon White House Chief of Staff H.R. Haldeman's diaries, which have now been released after both Nixon and Haldeman have mercifully relieved the earth of their presence, i.e. they're both shuffled off this mortal coil, far too late in both of their cases, but what the heck, better late than never. The revelations, in particular by H.R. Haldeman, have served to buttress what I said some weeks back after Nixon died. I did an archive show called Richard Nixon's Greatest Hits, in which I illustrated what an absolute villain and what a doctrinaire fascist with a capital F Richard Nixon was. And many of the revelations that have come out about his racism and his doctrinaire anti-Semitism have served to buttress what I had to say about Nixon as a linchpin of American fascism and as an integral part of a worldwide fascist community. And I will reiterate what I said before. The only good thing Richard Nixon ever did was die, and he was 81 years late doing that. So we're going to touch ever so briefly on Richard Nixon's trip to San Jose, because what is not in this article is that the criminal conspiracy section of the LAPD, that was an LAPD intelligence unit which operated all over the state of California and even outside of the state of California, in conjunction with the federal intelligence agencies, well, the LAPD CCS helped to set up this disturbance. It was a provocation. That documentation is contained in Radio Free America number 23, and perhaps we will play that short section at some point in the not-too-distant future. After that, we're going to go into the second part of the archive show that I began last week, The Seeds of Nuremberg. We're going to resume the thread of the discussion from last week, talking about the profound connections between American eugenicists and American scientific racists and the Nazi intellectuals who helped frame the German racial and eugenics policies which led to the Nazi extermination programs. Specifically, we're going to touch back briefly on the influence of people associated with the Pioneer Fund and their influence on the Nazi racial laws. We're going to take a look at people like Harry Laughlin and Frederick Osborne and the way in which they affected the German eugenics laws. I would recommend, for those of you who would like to flesh out your understanding of this particular event and this particular connection, get a hold of last week's broadcast and also get a hold of a miscellaneous archive show done in March of 1988 called Euthanasia in Contemporary America and Nazi Germany. Following that, we're going to be taking a look at an interesting intelligence slash possible fascist connection to the gun control movement. Now, my opposition to gun control, and in particular my interest in an apparent intelligence community connection to the gun control movement, is all to be understood against the background of, first of all, the martial law contingency plans, which have been on the books in the United States for a number of years now, and which came to light during the Iran-Contra scandal, and also the precarious situation of America's economy. I am afraid that there is going to be an economic catastrophe in this country. I don't know when, maybe in 6 months, maybe in a few years, maybe 40 or 50 years down the line, but I'm afraid that when that crisis comes, and I think it is coming, it is going to lead to the formal imposition of overt German-style fascism here in the United States, with a few new wrinkles because of technology. I think that there are ominous signs that just such preparations for just such a crisis, contingency plans for just such a crisis, are under active preparation, and I think that the push to disarm the population may very well be involved with that. Opposition to gun control is traditionally viewed as a right-wing political stance. I am not a right-winger by any stretch of the imagination. However, I think the disarming of the population will make an eventual catastrophe along the lines of what happened in Germany much more probable here in this country. And we're going to begin by taking a look at the push for gun control, in particular the House passing a bill to ban assault weapons. There has never been a policeman that anybody has recorded that was killed by an assault weapon. Assault weapons count for next to nothing in terms of violent crime. They would, however, in the event of the imposition of martial law, the accessibility to such weapons would permit a civilian population to offer a substantive amount of resistance to the imposition of dictatorship. Beyond that, one of the things that the gun control movement has drawn on in order to gain support is the fact of America's political assassinations. I talk a great deal about this country's political assassinations, and even though it is quite clear to the intelligent observer and the knowledgeable observer that this country's political assassinations, the assassinations of the Kennedys, Martin Luther King, and others, all the way on up through the attempted assassination of President Reagan in 1981, these were not due to the actions of lone nuts or due to the excessive availability of firearms. They were due to malfeasance. They were due to misdeeds on the part of an explicitly fascist milieu incorporating large elements of our national security establishment, as well as organized crime and other related interests. President Clinton recently cited the memories of the assassinations of Robert Kennedy and Martin Luther King to push for gun control. And indeed, the Brady Bill was named after former White House Press Secretary James Brady, who was critically wounded in the assassination attempt on Ronald Reagan. There's a miscellaneous archive show about that attempt, which illustrates the very firm indications that the intelligence community, and specifically a fascist element of the intelligence community associated with former Vice President George Bush, is in all probability the culprit behind the quote lone nut unquote John Hinckley, who was the patsy for that particular incident. Hinckley was probably shooting, but he was not the person who shot Reagan in all probability. We're going to use the political assassinations in this country as a jumping off point to an examination of the way in which, first of all, this country's political assassinations have been used to justify gun control. And in particular, we're going to be taking a look at another individual who served on the U.S. prosecutorial staff at Nuremberg in 1945 and 6, former United States Senator from Connecticut, Thomas Dodd. Thomas Dodd was also a former FBI operative. He also had close connections to the Central Intelligence Agency and also to the American Security Council. The American Security Council is an ultra-reactionary organization with explicitly fascist connections. Its genesis goes all the way back to the pre-World War II period and Harry Young's American Vigilance Intelligence Federation, which worked directly with the Goebbels-Hitler anti-Comintern of 1939 and 40. We're going to take a look, first of all, as we examine Thomas Dodd, his work for various congressional committees. We're going to take a look at Thomas Dodd's role. We're going to, I should say, delve into the book Deep Politics by Peter Dale Scott, the brilliant Berkeley professor and an individual who, in my opinion, merits serious consideration as the foremost political consciousness in America today. Peter Dale Scott's opus, Deep Politics and the Death of JFK, is going to be providing us with some of our information this evening. This is a very important book. Also, as I've said before, a very flawed book as well. Nonetheless, I do very strongly recommend it. First of all, we're going to take a look at Thomas Dodd's role in helping to circulate the disinformation that Lee Harvey Oswald was trained along with a KGB assassin or alleged KGB assassin named Bogdan Stashinsky. And this disinformation, which we looked at in both Radio Free America Programs 15 and Radio Free America Programs 37, that disinformation was used to paint Oswald red and point in the direction of a Soviet and/or Cuban conspiracy. The elements associated with this disinformation were the elements associated with the WACCFL, the World Anti-Communist Congress for Freedom and Liberation. That particular body and the closely related and intersecting American Security Council did much to circulate the disinformation about the Bogdan Stashinsky Oswald KGB connection. Specifically, Bogdan Stashinsky allegedly assassinated a former Ukrainian fascist and separatist and a German intelligence operative who later jumped to the CIA with the Reinhard Gehlen spy organization. That fellow's name was Stefan Bandera. Again, we took a look at the Bandera assassination, the disinformation campaign to connect that to the assassination of President Kennedy, And what we're going to do this evening, by way of examining the connections between Senator Thomas Dodd and some of the work that he did, and the rollback or liberation milieu that I focused on in Radio Free America program number 37. We're going to begin, as I said, by taking a look at Dodd's connection to the floating of the Bogdan-Stashinsky disinformation campaign. And one of the people who worked with Thomas Dodd in helping to float this story was a fellow named Julian Sauerwein. And it appears, according to Peter Dale Scott's analysis at any rate, that among the interests lying behind this disinformation were elements associated with the Central Intelligence Agency. After taking a look at the role of Dodd in helping to surface the Bogdan-Stashinsky-Oswald KGB disinformation element, we're going to take a look at Senator Thomas Dodd's connections to the American Security Council, an organization which would bind him to a number of fascists, both domestic and foreign, including former Douglas MacArthur intelligence chief, Major General Charles Willoughby. After that, we're going to take a look at a very interesting piece of analysis by Professor Scott. We're going to take a look at his analysis of Lee Harvey Oswald as a government informant. In all probability, according to Peter Dale Scott, Lee Harvey Oswald was being trafficked around by a private detective outfit which was doing contract work for the U.S. government. And this is how he was infiltrated into various milieu. And that infiltration ultimately was used to set Oswald up as the patsy in the assassination of President Kennedy. We're going to take a look at speculation by Peter Dale Scott that Lee Harvey Oswald may have been a national security informant, specifically someone infiltrated into defense industries in order to look for, quote, subversives, unquote. After that, we're going to take a look at the interesting connection between Senator Thomas Dodd's committee's investigation into the mail-order firearms business and the kind of work that was being done by Lee Harvey Oswald. This is not by any means a hard connection, but Peter Dale Scott has speculated that among the things Oswald was doing was attempting to gain information on the mail-order firearms business, and that quite possibly Senator Dodd's committee, that Oswald was working with Senator Dodd's committee. This is an entirely speculative connection. It is certainly not one that Peter Dale Scott would assess to be a hard connection by any means, nor would I. However, it is interesting, and I think the possible role of Lee Harvey Oswald as a government infiltrator and informant attempting to get the skinny on the mail-order firearms business, which ultimately led to Lee Harvey Oswald being connected with the weapon that he supposedly used to kill President Kennedy, raises some interesting questions about Senator Dodd and about the possibility, and it's only that in my mind, the possibility that the plans to disarm the American people and to at least in part use political assassinations to justify the disarming of the American people, I suspect that it is possible. Note the use of the term possible, that these plans were laid a long time ago. One hesitates to attribute the main elements of contemporary power politics to some sort of master plan that was laid a long time ago. But plans are laid well in advance. They are implemented through a series of contingencies as the circumstances warrant the implementation of those contingencies. I have been convinced for a long time, and I recommend, among other programs, the first two Radio Free America shows, that plans were laid a long time ago, possibly even before World War II. I am convinced in the immediate aftermath of World War II, plans were laid on the part of very powerful interests to turn the United States fascist. And the possibility that Lee Harvey Oswald may in fact have been working for Senator Dodd's committee or for interests associated with Senator Dodd's committee is one that I think should be very seriously explored. Certainly, the assassination of John Kennedy, as well as the assassinations of Martin Luther King and Robert Kennedy, were used to justify the implementation of gun control legislation. We're also going to take a look at the role of former Los Angeles policeman Manny Pena in not only investigating, or some would say covering up, the assassination of Robert Kennedy. Manny Pena was an LAPD operative with an intelligence background who was principally involved in Special Unit Senator. That was the body of the Los Angeles Police Department that was investigating Robert Kennedy's assassination. Their investigation was less than vigorous, and many observers have felt that it was, in fact, that unit deliberately covered up Robert Kennedy's assassination. I refer people to Radio Free America program number 9 and also the recently re-released book, The Assassination of Robert F. Kennedy by John Christian and William Turner. Interestingly enough, Manny Pena, in addition to his work for Special Unit Senator and his work for U.S. intelligence, was involved in tracing down the telescopic sight that Lee Harvey Oswald supposedly used on his rifle. And apparently, among his many connections, Manny Pena's many connections, was his work as an operative for Senator Dodd's committee. I would note that the 1968 Gun Control Act was passed in part because of political pressure stemming from this country's political assassinations, in particular the twin assassinations of Martin Luther King and Robert Kennedy in early 1968. The chief author of that legislation was the late Senator Thomas Dodd, who, as I mentioned, was a former prosecutor on the U.S. prosecutorial staff at Nuremberg. As we saw last week, the U.S. prosecutorial staff was less than vigorous in their pursuit of Nazi war crimes. I bring up the Oswald, the possible Oswald-Dodd connection, the certain connections of Senator Dodd to, first of all, the U.S. prosecutorial staff at Nuremberg, the Bogdan-Stashinsky disinformation ploy, the American Security Council, because there has been an element of information that has been circulated in firearms publications as well as right-wing literature that I think warrants serious investigation. Now, once again, I want to emphasize very strongly that I'm not presenting this piece of information as established fact, although it may very well be. There is information being circulated, or there are assertions being circulated, that the U.S. Gun Control Act of 1968 was based very closely on a Nazi Gun Control Act from March of 1938. I have a copy of the American legislation, also a copy of the original Third Reich firearms control law, their Nazi weapons law of March of 1938. Unfortunately, my German language skills are not sufficient to translate that very long document and to examine just how closely the two are connected. Unfortunately, my various professional contacts, including Professor Wilhelm Stauffer, are not in a position to do that either. I'm not sure if we're going to be hearing from Professor Wilhelm Stauffer or not. There's been a lot of pressure, and he's been under a lot of strain between his various professional commitments, by the way, so I don't know if we're going to be hearing from him or not. I'm inclined to doubt it at this point. He had indicated to me that at some point, when the pressure got too great, he was just going to cut it loose, and there's been a tremendous amount of pressure on both sides of the Atlantic, as the Wilhelm Stauffer interviews have had a profound effect on the German and European political situation they have, and it's resulted in a lot of heat. So I, at this point, would not count on hearing from Professor Stauffer again, at least not in the immediate future. I think, though, that the numerous connections of Senator Dodd to the FBI, to elements associated with CIA, American Security Council, the Bogdan-Stashinsky disinformation effort, as well as the U.S. prosecutorial staff at Nuremberg, the possibility that Lee Harvey Oswald may have been working for Senator Dodd's subcommittee, all of these things, I think, need to come into play as we take a look at the U.S. Gun Control Act of 1968. If, in fact, as has been asserted by various gun firearms magazines and some right-wing literature, the 68 Gun Control Act is, in fact, modeled almost entirely on the Third Reich's Gun Control Act of 1938, the presence of Thomas Dodd on the U.S. prosecutorial staff at Nuremberg looms larger, and I think it is something that warrants serious investigation, because if in fact our Gun Control Act of 68 was based on the Nazi Gun Control Act of 38, as has been alleged by firearms publications and some right-wing literature, that would place the work of Senator Dodd's committee and Senator Dodd himself, going from his FBI CIA ASC connections all the way back to his work on the Nuremberg prosecutorial staff, that would place that in an entirely different context. And it would suggest at least the possibility that the plans, the contingency plans for disarming America in preparation for martial law and dictatorship may have been laid a long time ago. Once again, I'm not saying that is the case. I'm asking, is it? Because there are indications it might be, and we need to find out whether or not it is. After that, we're going to take a look at, I'm going to play an old archive show from September of 1988. I replayed this about a year and a half ago, but one of the individuals who has been very centrally placed in the push for gun control is the current Secretary of the Treasury, Lloyd Bentsen. And indeed, Lloyd Bentsen is an individual whose name has cropped up in connection with the Defense Industrial Security Command, later the Defense Investigative Service, and a number of observers have suggested that Lloyd Bentsen himself may very well be connected to the milieu. Well, he certainly was connected to the milieu that was involved in this country's political assassinations. And I have spoken about Lloyd Bentsen's key position with regard to the Secret Service and the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms with regard to both the World Trade Center bombing and also the situation in Waco. Specifically, I've discussed that in Radio Free America 38. We are going to take a look at Lloyd Bentsen's background and his connections to the milieu involved in this country's political assassinations by once again gaining some perspective on the history of the gun control movement in this country and the extent to which it has drawn on this country's political assassinations for popular support in attempting to reduce America's access to firearms. So that, in a nutshell, is what we're going to be listening to on tonight's program. We're going to be taking a musical break, and then when we come back, I will be doing the level best I can to execute this archive show, despite the fact that, as you can hear, I have a rather severe head cold. So you just have to bear with me here as I do a somewhat submarine broadcast. It's time now for the main body of the prepared portion of tonight's program. Once again, for those of you who eventually hear this program on tape, this is part two of an archive show called The Seeds of Nuremberg. And indeed, tonight's program is being executed with a serious head cold on the part of yours truly. So if I sound a little different, it's because I am bien enrhumé, as the French say. So maybe a periodic snot break, so to speak, here while I repair my situation. But otherwise, we will proceed. For those who do hear this program on tape, today is Sunday, May 22nd of 1994. There has been a fair amount of attention on the death of former First Lady Jacqueline Onassis Kennedy. We're not going to talk about that. We will, however, talk about an event that she figured prominently in, not the execution of the event, but she is one of the people most identified with it, namely the assassination of President Kennedy. One of the people who appears to have been involved in that assassination is former President Richard Nixon, the man defeated by John Kennedy in 1960. When Nixon passed away recently, I did an archive show called Richard Nixon's Greatest Hits, and there's a pun there. The recent disclosures concerning the diaries of former White House Chief of Staff H.R. Bob Haldeman have revealed that Richard Nixon was indeed the bigot and fascist that I said he was. And once again, for the record, the only good thing Richard Nixon ever did was die, and he was 81 years late on that. There is an interesting article on the front page of the perspective section in today's San Jose Mercury News. Once again, this is Sunday, May 22nd of 1994. This is an article by Mercury News writer Harry Farrell, F-A-R-R-E-L-L. It's headlined, How Nixon Incited 1970 San Jose Riot. And it concerns a serious disturbance that took place when Richard Nixon visited San Jose in 1970. In the archive show Radio Free America program number 23, The Terror Connection Part 2, California under Ronald Reagan, there is discussion of the criminal conspiracy section of the Los Angeles Police Department. That was an LAPD intelligence unit that was put together in the late 60s and early 70s. One of the main functions of that unit was to stage provocations, both against the anti-Vietnam War movement and the Black Power movement. And one of the things that is contained in Radio Free America 23, in turn, drawing from information on the book The Glass House Tapes by Lewis Tackwood and the Citizens Research and Investigative Commission was how this particular incident, this riot in 1970, was set up by the elements associated with the criminal conspiracy section. We will discuss that in a further broadcast. So simply note that this incident in San Jose in 1970 was in fact a provocation, according to the information developed by Lewis Tackwood and the Citizens Research and Investigative Commission. Last week we explored at some length the connections between American eugenicists, American scientific racists, and their counterparts in Germany, both today and in particular in the pre-World War II years. In a miscellaneous archive show entitled Euthanasia in Contemporary America and Nazi Germany, I explored the profound connections between the international mental hygiene movement, the international eugenics movement, and the international euthanasia movement. It was the Nazi euthanasia program growing out of the Tiergartenstrasse 4 program that led directly to the Nazi extermination programs. Once again, the miscellaneous archive show Euthanasia in Contemporary America and Nazi Germany from March of 1988 is an important reference point in that context.